Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to TaiCon East 2006. I now take great pleasure to call upon Mr. Apoorva Bagri, Chairman Methodist UK and Chairman Thai Global, to open TaiCon East.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Greetings, and I too would like to add my warmest welcome to all of you at this wonderful TaiCon, which I hope will bring together budding entrepreneurs, charter members of Thai, other members, sponsors, and friends. I live in England, and of course it is always a particular pleasure to visit New England, especially this beautiful city, and it really is a wonderful city and a great place to host a meeting such as this. On behalf of Thai Global and our 1,400 charter members, 10,000 members in 44 cities and across 9 countries, it is a real pleasure to be here. The theme of my talk this morning is globalization and what this means in a flat world. Globalization has flattened the world. By utilizing modern communication devices, management is now able to relocate capacity to countries with lower labor costs and other advantages. Competition to cut costs has been the major driver behind this development. But in focusing on cost reductions, it is important, I think, that we do not lose sight of creating value for our businesses. This was brought home to me when I read New Thinking for the New Millennium by Edward de Bono, that original thinker and author. Cutting costs, downsizing, and efficient housekeeping are often necessary, but they are not sufficient long-term strategies. Value creation is essential, he wrote. Guy Dollet, the chief executive of the steel company Arcelor, made this same point very well in defending his proposed tie-up with Russia's Severstal. What is more important, adding tons or creating shareholder value? At the outset, we do, though, need to ask, I think, a fairly basic question. What do we mean by globalization? Is it some complex change in the way we do business, some new dynamic secular force? Or is it really management's ability to utilize today's technology to obtain optimum results for their operations by reorganizing the way that their business is conducted? The answer, I believe, is that globalization is the ability to shift capacity to countries that offer the best results in terms of efficient supply chains, pools of competitive and skilled labor, and a host government that is business-friendly. The rest is just hype. Writing earlier this week in the Financial Times, Sam Palmisano, the chairman and chief executive of IBM, makes the observation that global companies of the future must abandon their colonial attitudes and truly integrate their activities across geographies, including, where appropriate, not just production, but also knowledge transfer and research and development. If not, he argues, protectionism and a backlash against big business will slow the move to what we here would describe as a flat world. The world of business is clearly not a static place. It is dynamic, forever shifting. Today, Asia is the focus for relocating business, with China being the center of this powerful trend. Yet a decade ago, it was Southeast Asia that was the focus of this capacity relocation. And in the future, as I will suggest later, the focus may well shift elsewhere. McKinsey, in a quarterly report, Beyond Cheap Labor, made an interesting observation. Between 2000 and 2004, Mexico lost 270,000 assembly jobs. But they went on to say, rather than fixating on jobs lost to China, these countries should remember a fact of economic life. And that is that no place can remain the world's low-cost producer forever. Even China will lose that title one day. Instead of trying to defend low-wage assembly jobs, Mexico and other middle-income countries should focus on creating jobs that add real value. We may live in a flat world, but it is still one saddled with the baggage of the past. Society has not, and probably cannot, shed its political impediments to globalization. For instance, recent attempts by foreigners to buy US companies have been met with sharp riposts from Washington, and West Europe, sadly, still retains its mantle of fortress Europe. And just as an aside, the French even regard yogurt production as being a strategic national interest. Globalization is, I believe, therefore, no more than a management tool. It is up to us as business owners to use these tools to add value. In the process, we need to analyze what globalization can do and cannot do to our business models. And today, I will use the example of my own industry, the copper industry, to illustrate what I mean. There is a myth, and I think a growing myth, that business cycles have been repealed because of globalization. Growth in the BRICS, the economies of Brazil, Russia, India, and China, will continue to be dynamic year in and year out, is the perceived wisdom. And it is perhaps this perception that has helped to lead a stampede of funds into the base metals complex. And the amount that has been invested may be up to $1 trillion. I have, though, three reasons for saying that business cycles have not been repealed, beyond an obvious reminder that at the top of all of the most recent cycles, similar statements have been made. First, major central banks have been busy taking money off the table for some months, but the financial sector has continued to be an avid risk taker, until very recently, that is. Whenever the financial system has encountered this dichotomy, there have been financial accidents, such as the Asian crisis, LTCM, and Russia. We are, I think, now in that same danger zone. Second, it is becoming clearer that with the exception of some pockets, the housing market here in the US is weakening, and with it, house prices. There is a clear correlation between house prices and consumer spending. Any slowdown of consumer spending in the US will have profound global reverberations because the US consumer accounts for 20% of global GDP, precisely double that of the entire Japanese economy. Thirdly, any slowdown in US consumer spending will have a direct impact on China's economy because of that country's large exports to the US. Moreover, from what I can see and hear, China's leadership is worried by the runaway growth of fixed assets investment and of the duplication of capacity within its manufacturing sector. A slowing of global growth over the next 4 years is therefore, I believe, a considerable risk. In sum, globalization does not and cannot prevent business cycles from repeating themselves. The world has become too interdependent, too flat, for that rosy outcome. Globalization has, however, had two principal effects on my industry: the relocation of capacity to Asia, especially to China, and the parabolic rise of copper prices. In 5 years, driven by strong demand in China and other parts of Asia, copper prices have risen sixfold. Market players now talk of copper being a financial instrument, not an industrial metal. I now talk about copper as a precious metal, because if current prices persist, end users will be driven to designing copper out of all but its most precious uses. Potentially, The copper industry could lose 15 to 20% of its market share within 5 years. So what has been a boon to the financial sector could be the death of the copper fabricating industry. And I give this example because other industries in other sectors face the same challenges, and I believe now run the same risks. There is, though, a very important change starting to take place in China. The leadership wants to change the basic business model that has been so widely employed over the last decade. This model has been based around creating critical mass at any cost, often with zero-cost financing. The result has been a gross duplication of capacity, misallocation of capital, with the end result that there is virtually nil pricing power and deflation. The leadership's concern is that unless changed, the model will result in falling productivity and a new round of NPLs with a negative impact on the Chinese economy. Over the next 5 years, I'm sure that we will start to see the model being changed to one that focuses on return on capital and profitability. This will mean a significant round of manufacturing restructuring. It has already begun. 4 years ago, for instance, there were around 200 makers of air conditioners in China. Now there are only about 20. But alas, even that number may be too many. The end result, and I think this is an important one, the end result will mean a dynamically different manufacturing world. Global prices of finished goods will be rising because China will no longer be exporting deflation, but rather inflation. Indeed, I would make the point that we may already be at, or are close to, that tipping point. Given the increase in costs that will occur in China and elsewhere in Asia, coupled with what we are likely to see in terms of exchange rate movements, with a substantial rise in the value of the Chinese renminbi against the US dollar, I believe that globalization could move into its next and perhaps its strangest of phases, a phase that today many of us sitting in this room would regard as counterintuitive. It will not just be these new cost dynamics in China and other parts of Asia that will lead us into this next phase, but it will also be logistics. As a percentage of total costs, logistics have in many cases become a very important cost factor. In 5 years' time, for these reasons, the next phase in globalization will see manufacturing and businesses being located or even relocated close to customers, close to the customer's base. Capacity that will stay in Asia will be to service that market, and I believe newly designed capacity will be built for North America and even for Fortress Europe. Knowledge-based companies will not escape. Even they will see similar transformations in the way that they conduct business. And the current outsourcing model will, I believe, need to be re-examined as wage rates and costs continue to rise elsewhere. So in summary, let me leave you with a few simple thoughts to be woven into our today's deliberations on trends. Firstly, globalization is really nothing more than a management tool, and it should be seen and used as such. Secondly, the era of falling product prices is coming to an end. In itself, this opens up new opportunities for those companies prepared to laterally rethink their operational and systems architectures. Innovating in tomorrow's flat world will require a different set of skills and even more dexterity than today. And my final point is that globalization in a flat world will be a moving dynamic. It will be driven primarily for the singular mission of value creation for all stakeholders. And it is one that will see companies and businesses move across continents in ever shorter time cycles as they seek to locate where the political climate is business friendly, where logistics are cost effective, and efficiencies are likely to be so significant that they can maximize the return they can deliver to shareholders and stakeholders. Thank you very much for your thoughtful attention, and have a wonderful TICON. Thank you.